NARAL's The Morning After is a production of NARAL Pro Choice Ohio. Happy Thanksgiving and enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Randy.
I'm Jamie.
I'm Gabe. Hey, so Randy, you had a great conversation last week with some friends of ours. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so our friends at New Voices Pittsburgh and Cleveland, which is a reproductive justice organization. And if you listen to the podcast, you'll know more about reproductive justice, which basically, you know, is the intersection of women of color and issues that women of color face that pertain to reproductive rights and kind of going through all of the intersectionality that exists within that. And so we had a really awesome conversation talking about reproductive justice, electoral politics, environmental justice, black churches. So it was a really great conversation. And Latasha and Jasmine got to tell us a lot more about New Voices. And, you know, I'm looking forward to working with them, you know, more here in Ohio now that they have a presence in Cleveland.
Yeah. The excuse me. The part in the conversation that I didn't expect it to go to was the environmental part. I mean, it really was a wide-ranging set of issues.
Yeah.
That a lot of people don't think of.
Yeah, you know, that's something that I, when Annie and I attended the OOC, Ohio Organizing Collaborative, did a really awesome week-long training back in July in Cincinnati at Xavier University. And a lot of different people came out, a bunch of organizations I had never even heard of. They're doing really awesome organizing work here in Ohio. And so one of the people was not my direct roommate, but my dorm mate, because we were staying on campus. And so she was a retired nurse, and she has done a lot of stuff around, you know, we talked about the social determinants of health and all the things that are involved in that, and just things that you don't really think about. Mm-hmm. Saying, for instance, like, you know, if a pregnant woman, a black Latina woman goes and gets, you know, prenatal care for stress or something else that's going on with her. But then at the same time, it's like she can go to the doctor and get the medicine, but you're still going back into that same environment that caused you to have these issues in the first place. And we talked like a little bit about, you know, asthma and how black children are 5 times more likely to die from asthma attacks than white children.
Right.
And so it's just kind of things like that you hear, or you may not have heard that before. And you're like, well, why is that? Which my question was in there is like, where are the black children at that the white kids aren't, that they're dying from asthma? But it's just, you know, little things that go along with that, that go along with reproductive justice that, you know, you have to think about. It was also with the lead paint, they did a study that a lot of inmates have lead poisoning, mm-hmm. which leads to behavior issues. And if you're a black or brown boy or girl mm-hmm. at school and you have behavior issues, then they're more likely to get arrested at school and, you know, keep getting arrested, and it kind of leads to that school to prison pipeline, which we have talked about. But New Voices, which Latasha talks about that more on the podcast, has done a lot of really great work, you know, bridging reproductive justice and environmental justice.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think there's many justice angles that they talk to. And I know that we've been, you know, friends of theirs, but the first time where I was really familiar with their organization and their work was during the, you know, the beginnings of the Black Lives Matter movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so hearing about a lot of the, you know, the killings of people of color and then the activism around that, there was a new push to look at it in terms of a reproductive framework. You know, if you can't survive to the point where you can reproduce and have kids, or if you do have kids and those kids' lives is threatened by violence, by environmental issues, you know, by any one of the multitude of factors that they're facing, then it becomes a very legitimate reproductive issue.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so that's where I think groups like various NARALs affiliate around the country started to, you know, kind of raise their heads up and say, hey, wait a minute, this, you know, somebody getting shot on the side of the road by, you know, by a police officer, or, you know, just by
somebody else violent in the neighborhood.
Yeah. These things are totally something that we should be speaking out against.
Well, I think it's a critical place too, where we can come in and have those conversations with our supporters, because I think
one of the things about reproductive justice is that it's an amazing framework, but because it kind of came out of communities of color, mm-hmm. getting it kind of more accepted widely within kind of the movement overall has been a challenge. And so one of the places where ally groups like NARAL can come in and start pushing these things, because when the Ferguson rallies and protests were happening, we put up the Repeal Hyde Art Project has amazing graphics, and mm-hmm. we put up one of theirs, which is the right to parent a child without violence is reproductive justice, or something along that front, with a mother and a son. And we put that up on our Facebook page, and it was ridiculous, the things we were getting back from our supporters saying that, why are you going down this way? That has nothing to do with this. And you'd come back with information because you want to help educate, and then they would, the vitriol that came back from our people not understanding how these things were connected. And then again, I think we posted the same thing after the Tamir Rice incident, and you know, that was a year ago yesterday, and got the same, you know, I was hoping that maybe because we had done it before and had those conversations, it'd be a little better this time, and it was no better that time, and the same people were having the same arguments back at us that this is not part of your work and you just need to leave this alone. I'm like, no, actually it is a big part, and this is why. And
yes, so, it is part of our work.
Yeah.
Because it is things that, you know, specifically affect, you know, women of color, and we should talk about those things more because we need more women of color to come out to, you know, not just be able to go into spaces and talk about their unique experiences, but we just need more women of color to come out in general, to come to testimony, to come to hearings, to testify, because we don't have that right now. And we can't really be, you know, fully representing everyone if we're not representing everyone and they're not coming out. So I think it's important that we're talking about it and that we do it. So,
I was really surprised, unpleasantly surprised at our supporters on those things.
That,
like, it was just
some
of the things
surprise
that we were getting back, you know, were the things that you were seeing kind of the right wing talk shows talking about. Well, he should have, you know, stopped running, or he should have put his hands up, or he shouldn't have been aggressive, or he shouldn't have been, you know, basically he shouldn't have been a little black boy
yes,
in public.
Exactly. He shouldn't have been a little black boy paying in public by himself. If someone's gonna, you know,
in a park.
Yes, because that just gives the police an excuse to roll up and shoot him within 3 seconds.
And apparently, that's totally reasonable.
So, you know, it really is our place as a group that, of course, supports groups like New Voices in work towards reproductive justice to speak out and educate our people about how these things intersect. Because reproductive rights is a piece of this whole thing, but as, you know, Jasmine and Latasha like to say all the time, you know, without access, there is no right. It doesn't matter if abortion is a right, if nobody can get to a clinic, or nobody can pay for the services, or nobody can parent the child that they want to have, because nobody should be making a decision to have an abortion if that person isn't making it solely based on economic reasons. We should be supporting her and helping her, you know, have the family she wants to have.
Between 100,000 and 240,000 women in Texas, these are just ones who are reported trying to self-induce abortion since they put forth all of those really, really drastic restrictions. And I don't think it was broke down by race or socioeconomic status, but I mean, you can read between the lines.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was 100,000 people, right?
Across Texas. Exactly. I mean, between 100,000 and 240,000. Yeah. Like I said, those are just the women who are willing to say, I tried to, you know, induce my own abortion. So I think, I mean, really, how many have tried to do that since they can't get to the clinic?
I think when you get that scale, then you're probably looking at a pretty accurate sample of, you know, the people of Texas.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So these things are all so intertwined and interconnected that, you know, it's really good. So everybody should definitely go back and listen to Randy.
Yes, go back, listen to the New Voices podcast. Hopefully we'll do more in the future. Mm-hmm. And I had a really good time talking. Yeah. Gabe had to tell me to wrap it up.
I feel that common sometimes around here.
No, that's great. People can find that podcast at NARALProChoiceOhio.com. Or if you search on iTunes for NARAL's The Morning After, which hopefully is how you're listening to us. And then look for the episode with New Voices in the title.
Mm-hmm. And then you should also go and look up more information about New Voices. They have a New Voices Cleveland Facebook page, and then a New Voices Pittsburgh, because that's where they kind of are headquartered, website as well, so you can learn more about them.
But they're branching out. It's not exclusive to the Pittsburgh area.
They talked
during our discussion about their intent to move towards Cincinnati, you know, cover all of Ohio, just...
I told him I'm ready.
Yep.
Let's do it.
Right. One last thing before we skip to the next subject. On the whole topic of, you know, white folks not getting the need for intersectional feminism. You remember the Emmys and how...
Patricia Arquette?
Not Patricia Arquette. She won the Oscar. But it was the same thing during the Emmys. And how to get it, Viola Davis, one for how to get
it. And the lady from the soap opera. Yeah.
That lady, just like a week ago, followed me on Twitter. And I'm like, what? And so I checked out her page and I thought, okay, maybe she just like follows hundreds of thousands. Uh-huh. She's only following like 500 people. And the only thing I can figure out is there's a guy named Gabriel Mann who's on a TV show, like a network TV show. He's like a big famous actor.
And
he's like on an ABC drama or something like that. And I'm sure she thinks that I'm that guy.
She's in for a rude awakening.
Yeah, but I got the little notification. I'm like, she's following you. I was like, wait a minute, I know that name. Nancy, whatever she is. And I was like, there's no way she meant to follow me.
Come on, Gabe. Give yourself a little more credit.
That is too funny.
So I don't know.
Hopefully she won't unfollow you.
Or hopefully she loves football and NASCAR, because that's half of my Twitter feed. So
especially now that the legislature's calmed down a little bit.
Yeah. So. Dear Nancy, what do you think of the Buckeyes?
I think
exactly.
We should probably not get on that subject this week. we could go down that rabbit hole.
Stupid football. All right, what's next?
What's next?
Georgia won.
Whatever.
Must be nice. Must be nice.
Whatever.
Moving on.
So on the winners and losers, on the continual subject of John Kasich thinks he's the winner and Ohio women are really the losers, the AP actually came up with a really amazing story last week on how John Kasich, even though he basically almost fell off a stage trying to say he had absolutely nothing to do with the abortion restrictions in both state budgets so far and all the bills and those kind of things coming through. The AP wrote an article last week, you should check it out, on how the email trail actually connects John Kasich, his staffers, and the legislative offices. So as he was telling reporters and saying into microphones that he was just following the will of the legislature, he was actually behind the drafting and the writing of all of those abortion restrictions and was key in getting those into the budget and getting them passed.
Mm-hmm. We're shocked.
Yeah. I know, right?
Shocked. It's one of those things where it's like, I knew it, but I couldn't prove it. So when we finally saw the article, we were all, you know, very much like, we kind of knew that was happening.
Yeah. Right.
So that was the big bombshell breaking news last week that we all kind of went, about. So what'll be interesting now is what he does with that, because he's on the campaign trail.
Right.
You know, he's been doing that kind of behind the scenes. I don't have anything to do with this, because he wants to kind of play out whether or not it pulls well. You know,
he wants to pretend to be a moderate.
Yeah. Well, and if it pulls well, he'll take credit for it. If it doesn't pull well, you know, I was just doing what these legislators over here wanted me to do. I had no control over that. Even though it's his signature on
the
bill.
And he could veto it. Yeah, okay. No control.
And actually, in the budget, he could line item veto those things out. So, you know, this was all around his neck from the very beginning anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as we talked about when we talked about the budget, you know, Kasich loves going in and out the back door. So, you know, pushing these things through back channels and, you know, not facing the public on them just really shows what a coward he is. Mm-hmm. You know, if these are really your beliefs, then you need to stand up and be proud about them. I mean...
Yeah.
You know, Cruz and Rubio and Huckabee and all those folks don't have any trouble.
I know.
Standing
they
up
just
and being
shout
proud.
It from the rooftops.
Yeah. So, yeah, John Kasich is, again, just kind of the weenie who, you know, likes to hide behind things and pretend he's something that he's really not.
Right. Just to be clear, though, the email chain that the reporter, Julie Carr Smythe for the AP, what she turned up was evidence that they were working behind the scenes in 2012 in preparation for the 2013 budget. So soon after Kasich took office, they were starting these conversations.
Mm-hmm. No, 10 for 11, I think it was, actually. Yeah. It was for his first budget, right?
His first...
Because that would have been 11.
Okay, but the big restrictions came through in 2013.
Codification of the transfer agreements and that kind of stuff. Yeah, that was 13. Mm-hmm. Because now it's 15. Wow, geez.
Yeah, time flies.
But, almost 16.
This was this was early on in his administration, and he started talking to the legislature about how to get this done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This wasn't him
through
following
the
their
door.
Lead. Yeah, through the back door. He's the back door man.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he led the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His staff was advising the legislature on exactly how to push these.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look back to through that 2013, it was done very methodically. Mm-hmm. Not everything mm-hmm. came through in one big push.
No.
The budget process started back February and March, and we saw the first things somewhere around March to April.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that got added to the budget and the next round, then they added a little bit more. And then the next round, they added a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It was very strategic how it was done, and it was not done by the legislature. It was done by his office.
Yeah.
He picked those restrictions.
Exactly. And knowing this, he's the most anti-choice one that's running. He's the one who's put in the most restrictions. And people may say, oh, well, is he as crazy as like Huckabee or Rubio or Cruz? And yes, mm-hmm. He is.
Yeah.
Because some of these bills, just like Marco Rubio says he doesn't want any exceptions, a lot of the bills that he apparently has helped to craft and put forward, they don't have any. Nope. The 20-week ban, there's no exceptions for rape or incest, and a very narrow one for a life of the mother, because apparently it's never medically necessary.
And that's
according
life
to
of the mother,
non-doctors.
Not health of the mother.
Yes.
It's a huge difference.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So he is the most anti one running, but he's trying to put himself out there as the quote unquote compassionate conservative.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he expanded Medicaid and, you know, he would also go to a gay wedding. So he's obviously not that bad of a guy.
But your point is completely objective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this isn't like, you know, this isn't Randy thinks that Kasich is worse. This isn't NARAL thinks.
Yeah.
This is, you know, folks have looked at the actual number of restrictions.
There was an article that said he's the most anti-choice one running. And they talked about all the things that he's put forth. So
the only other candidates who came close were Lindsey Graham, who's, you know, been in the Senate forever. So he's got a bunch of Senate votes and not a serious candidate.
Yeah.
And then what's his name? Perry down in Texas, who's dropped out of the race.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And look at, you know, the state of abortion and women's rights in Texas.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So Kasich is numerically the worst.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And also the worst governor in Ohio's history. He signed more abortion restrictions in Ohio's history than any other governor we've ever had.
Right.
So, you know, the worst out there, the worst in here, you know, just the worst.
Yeah.
Yes.
So everybody should go check out that article. You can find that on our website too at prochoiceohio.org.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's Kasich. And then there's the legislature trying to help Kasich.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. What we saw last week.
Yeah, last
yes.
week.
I know.
Last week was really long. Yes, it was last week.
What we saw last week was the House voting on the House version of the defunding bill.
Yep.
What does that bill do?
So that bill will basically remove funding from the Ohio Department, any money that the Ohio Department of Health gives out in five program areas, including HIV and infertility and breast and cervical cancer and all these things. And any
left out abortion.
Yeah, because the Ohio Department of Health already withholds money from abortion services for low-income women. So, you know,
does
that's already a program.
Does the VAWA money come through them? Violence Against Women Act?
Some of the Violence Against Women Act. So the prevention programs through the Violence Against Women Act come through the Department of Health. There are other programs that go through other departments. We'll defund the VAWA program in Ohio. And then any state dollars that go to the Department of Health can't be given to anyone who provides or promotes elective abortion or non-therapeutic abortion. I think they changed the word recently. Or contracts with or affiliates with anybody who provides or promotes non-therapeutic abortion.
And that contract with thing is huge.
Yeah, so the contract mm-hmm. thing is huge because, you know, think about, you know, things like that are totally crazy and have never happened, like Ebola outbreaks. And your local health department is required by law to contract with every single hospital in the local area in order to do disaster preparedness. So, you know, terrorist attacks, Ebola outbreaks, things that never happen anywhere. And so these local health departments are required to contract with every hospital in the community. And because Ohio's definition of therapeutic abortion is so narrow, it's only rape or incest reported to police or the life of the woman. So the woman has to be about to die. So it doesn't include health of the woman. It doesn't include fetal anomalies. It doesn't include a woman who did not report her rape to the police.
Right.
And we know that some of our hospitals do abortions in those cases because the doctors want to treat their patients and help their patients. So if the health department has, you know, to contract with this local hospital and that local hospital does one abortion a year for fetal anomalies, that the local health department could lose all of their money from the Department of Health. What are things like that? Oh, those are like birth certificates and death certificates. They would no longer be able to issue birth certificates. So good luck if you need a birth certificate in Ohio Jeez. Anymore. They wouldn't be able to bill insurance because insurance plans also in some cases cover non-therapeutic abortion. So if right. they were billing the same insurance company that also provided abortion care through another insurance plan wow. to another company, they wouldn't be able to bill that insurance for a vaccination anymore. And part of the state budget was getting rid of all the state money for vaccinations because they wanted health departments to bill insurance companies. And now they're saying the health department can't bill the insurance company.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, they say this is all about Planned Parenthood and it will defund Planned Parenthood and could cause major, huge setbacks in a lot of their educational programs and stop tens of thousands of people from being able to access care at their trusted provider, Planned Parenthood.
Right.
But because they had to take such a wide swath at it and they don't care what collateral damage. They want to make a political ploy against Planned Parenthood.
They're going to start to care with what you're describing.
Well, I would hope so.
Apparently they don't, though.
I mean,
it seems like they really don't.
I don't think they understand. I mean, what?
Or you're about to say, they don't understand. Yeah, they're too stupid to do the research to find out what really the collateral damage is going to be.
Yeah. I mean, with that description, the ripples, you know, they exceed the splash.
Yes.
Yes.
That's massive.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it could ripple into every single community across the state. I mean, and all to, you know, play a political, you know, game with Planned Parenthood to prove who's best at, you know, being mean and taking
and not touch abortion procedures.
No.
Yes. I mean, oh my God. I mean, come on. Like, seriously, all of this collateral damage to try to stop something that's not going to be stopped. Yeah.
So it was interesting because on the floor in the debate that happened, because debate got cut off, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
But in his floor speech, State Representative Dan Ramos, a Democrat from Lorraine.
Who is awesome.
Yes.
Yes, who was
Thanks,
awesome.
Thanks, Dan Ramos.
Who actually, not to go down another rabbit hole, but there was a whole, we're not going to let Syrian refugees into Ohio thing before that. And none of our legislators knew that was even coming, and they all gave the best floor speeches I've ever seen them give. So good job. But on his floor speech against the Planned Parenthood defunding, it was really interesting because his whole speech was about how Ohio already withholds this money.
Yes.
We don't give out this money already. Here at NARAL, we really wish they would, but they don't.
Right.
So he actually pulled back and talked about how there was actually a vote in that chamber, that very room with people sitting at those very desks. And frankly, some people who were sitting there last Tuesday were there in 1998 and cast votes on this bill and went back through and talked about how this is already the law of the land in Ohio. And so you're not touching abortion at all whatsoever. What you're doing is taking away HIV funding and you're taking away birth control and you're taking away breast cancer screenings and cervical cancer screenings. And programs that teach teens how to be in good consensual relationships so that we don't enter places where people don't understand what consent is and we end up with people being raped. And all these amazing things should be happening out there, but instead, to play with abortion, you're going to take away all these other things and not touch abortion at all because you all already voted on this bill. So he was definitely fabulous on the floor of the House.
He was. I loved when he spoke about fiscal responsibility.
That was also good.
That's all. Okay. Fiscal responsibility.
Yeah.
This is not fiscal responsibility because you're telling women, first of, and also it's about, it's not about personal freedom because now you're telling people who want to choose to go to Planned Parenthood that, sorry, no, you can no longer go here because they're not going to have the funding to take you.
Yeah.
And, but then when the ACA was coming out, that's all they wanted to do is say the president is going to keep people from being able to choose their own doctor. Give me a, I mean, seriously, people. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that's what, I mean, what he was talking about with fiscal responsibility is that Planned Parenthood gets these grants because they compete for them and they are the best provider for those services.
Do the most with the least amount of money. Yeah.
So, you know, when Reverend Most was talking about how this actually bans fiscal responsibility, it does. It does exactly that. It stops them from funding the best provider for the least amount of money, which is what they should be doing with state and federal tax dollars.
And the presence of that care, having it be available, saves taxpayer money down the long run.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're going to spend more money in the end to have worse outcomes.
Yes. For every four public dollars spent on family planning services. No, but every $1, there it is.
Yeah.
For every $1 you spend on publicly funded family planning services, you save four other dollars. So yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. $1 invested
four
saves
other
four.
Other taxpayer dollars.
Yes. Yes. That's so
we don't care about that.
They remind me, you guys know that show, Trading Spouses. And there was one like really memorable episode where this woman came into this house. And I can't remember where she was from, but the whole time she was just screaming because they were not Christians. And she just kept saying, they're not Christian. And like literally screaming it and going demonic and just going absolutely insane all over the house. And that reminds me of the of what the Republicans are doing, saying no matter what, no matter what good they do, no matter what the collateral damage, they provide abortion. Yeah. So we have to defund it. And that's it.
Yep.
Nothing else matters. They provide abortion. They have to go.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. And they look and sound completely insane.
Mm-hmm. They do. And that's the whole thing. And I think the Speaker of the House actually realized how insane that they were looking, because when there were still like four or five Democrats who wanted to speak, and I'm sure an equal number of Republicans who wanted to speak, they called the vote unexpectedly. It was kind of weird because sometimes I don't pay attention. So they're on an amendment or something and they'll start voting on a look at Gabe all confused. And he'll be like, no, it's just, just an amendment. Don't pay attention.
Right.
But this was actually the vote. He just randomly called, the House will proceed and prepare and proceed to vote. And they all voted just kind of out of the blue with people still wanting to speak.
If they could get to their desk.
Yeah. People running. Yeah. Literally.
Some people didn't make it.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
There were
some sprints and some high heels on that floor that day because, they were all kind of milling around and those kinds of things. And you had to be at your desk to push a little button at your desk to actually cast your vote. And not only did he call the vote kind of instantaneously, he said, clerk will call the roll, which closes the vote almost like 30 seconds later.
Yeah.
There was no time at all to get back to your desk. If you were not sitting right there ready to vote, you didn't get a chance to vote.
Yeah.
Right. He cut off debate, which did not allow several legislators to speak. Two of them are very notable, Representative Greta Johnson, who is sponsoring the Abortion Access Without Apology legislation, a couple of the bills within that. And then Representative Kathleen Clyde, who gets our, that's what she said of the week. Representative Clyde filed a formal, letter of complaint with the House Clerk's office. You know, they didn't get a chance to talk. I thought was insane is they talked for 2.5 hours before this bill on a resolution, which had no legal standing
to do
on
something
Syrian refugees,
which they have no control over at all.
Exactly.
2.5 hours.
Yes.
Everybody got to talk on that thing.
Uh-huh. Yes.
No legal standing. Here's defunding Planned Parenthood will affect thousands, tens of thousands of Ohioans. Mm-hmm. And we don't have time for all of this.
Yeah. 45 minutes. You're done.
Yeah. These are the people that are in there right now. Yeah. So 20 vote. That's all I can say. Every time we get this stuff, like, you need to vote because these people are crazy and this is what we have. This is what happens.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yep.
And then later after the vote happened, there was a report from
The Guardian?
The Guardian.
The Guardian.
I think it was Molly Redden in The Guardian. Reporting, she'd interviewed Ohio Right to Life, found out that, you know, they've got this list that they've been talking about that's all these other places that people can go to find the services once Planned Parenthood will be cut. And it turns out that that list includes places like food banks.
Because that's where I go to eat my pap smear every week.
Pap smear and some corn.
Yeah.
Canned corn.
Here's a bag of onions. Please put your feet in the stirrups.
Yeah, so there was that. And there was like a, I think one was like an addiction treatment program too, that again just was like counseling and stuff for addiction.
Yeah, there have been some school nurses on the list. A couple are dentists. We've been talking about the dentist for quite some time. Yeah. Apparently they asked Ganadakis to see the full list, and he said, yes, sure, and then apparently emailed them a day later and said, actually, no.
Yeah.
So Ohio Ride to Life would not show this list of all of these providers that will replace Planned Parenthood.
I saw him tweeting about it, saying, go and find the list yourselves, this public record.
Yeah.
Don't be lazy. He's tweeting at Planned Parenthood. Yeah. Go and find the list yourself. Don't be lazy. I'm like, no, you're the one who said that all of these places were on the list, and now you don't want to show it.
Right.
Yeah.
It makes me really trust your list.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, the assumption on Ohio Ride to Life's part is that all of the places that they're putting on this list provide reproductive family planning care, are accepting new patients, and accept Medicaid.
Exactly. Yeah. And they don't.
Yeah, we know that's not the case. We heard some of their witnesses who were, you know, there was a doctor here or there. Mm-hmm. And when it came time for questions during the committee hearing, that's what they were asked is, are you accepting new patients? Oh, well, no. Do you accept Medicaid? Oh, no.
I have
then they're not available.
I was telling someone the other day, I think it was a volunteer I was having a one-on-one with, and we were talking about this, and I was filling her in. And I said, you know, I have great private insurance through NARAL. Thanks, NARAL. And but I wanted to change my OBGYN, so I found someone who I wanted to go to, and I called, and you know when she could get me in?
Like 9 months later?
March 3rd.
Mm-hmm. That's about right. Yeah, I can't tell you. I don't have a friend who did the same exact thing who could get in to an OBGYN's office in less than 6 months.
Right.
Crazy.
Because, you know, you can't get pregnant in that 6 months. You know, it's not like birth control, something you need kind of immediately or anything.
Yes.
Well, and the thing is, like, they keep talking about all these, you know, community providers like federally qualified health centers and all those kinds of things. And they're great places to go for generalized health care. But sometimes
they're great places because they refer to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah,
sometimes
exactly.
You need specialized care.
Right.
You know, the insertion of an IUD isn't something that an FQHC does every day, but it is something that Planned Parenthood does every day. Their providers are better at putting in IUDs. I want to go, if I want to have an IUD, I want to go to a provider who does it every day and knows how to do it in an expert way.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn to an expert. I don't want to go to my, you know, person that I go to when I have the common cold or, you know, sprain my ankle or do whatever.
You're not going to urgent care or the Minute Clinic.
No.
No.
So, you know, that's what really irritates, the funding piece really irritates me. And also this whole idea that we don't want you to go to a specialist for specialized healthcare. You would never tell a dude who's had a heart attack to not go to the cardiologist, but to go to his family practitioner. And you shouldn't be telling a woman who wants reproductive specialty healthcare to go to their family doctor instead of a specialist. Mm-hmm. If she wants to go to the specialist, she should have access to that specialist because they know what they're doing and they know how to do it best. So. Right.
And the legislation that they're pushing punishes the generalist if they refer to Planned Parenthood.
Oh, yeah. And they wouldn't be able to get their money anymore either.
It punishes them?
Well, yeah.
They can't refer.
See, again, once again, collateral damage. Yes. And they can't refer you to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah. Well, and the other piece of this that's kind of missing as well, and so really in the weeds piece, so it hasn't gotten out there as much, is a lot of these grants are only allowed to be competitive grants, so somebody new can only get the money every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're in the middle of one of these five-year cycles, they can't just replace Planned Parenthood with somebody else. If they don't give the money to Planned Parenthood, until that next competitive cycle time, which could be 4 or 5 years down the line, they just have to send the money back to the federal government. So again, this bill is saying we would rather nobody have care for the next 4 years rather than giving it to Planned Parenthood.
It just leaves the cash on the table.
Yeah, just leaves it, you know, we just send it back to the federal government rather than give it to Planned Parenthood. So that was, you know, a fun day in the Ohio State House. That was the day that we learned that the state government was scared of three things. Syrian toddlers coming to the United States. women getting reproductive health care or HIV tests or any of those kinds of things. And not enough guns existing in daycares, because we also voted on a concealed carry bill where now you can conceal carry your gun into your child's daycare center and various parts of the airport, which I think is a fabulous idea.
Yeah. Guns in the airport. That is a brilliant idea.
Because we should be scared of Syrian refugees and not other Americans with guns, because nothing ever happened bad.
Nothing ever went bad with that combination. So, yeah, that's what we learned in the Ohio State House last week. Mm-hmm. But even with all that, the Ohio State House doesn't get our walk of shame, because Kasich kind of blew its back out at the park last week.
He's just out there doing crazy shit.
So in response, when all of his other, you know, presidential candidates were talking about how we weren't going to let Syrians into the country, John Kasich comes up with a fabulous idea, guys. It's really cool. You want to know what it is? It's a...
No.
But
tell us anyway.
It's a Department of Judeo-Christian Values, because if we just teach the people in the Middle East that they should all be Christians, they won't want to kill us anymore.
Right.
Has he never heard of the Westboro Baptist Church?
I don't think anybody counts them as Christians anymore.
But they do, though. They call themselves Christian, and they are terrorists.
They are. I mean, there's a lot of Christian terrorists, the Oklahoma City bombings, all the people who bombed abortion clinics. Like,
yes.
When you're talking about terrorism, actually, Sherrod Brown could also be a contender for the That's What She Said last week when he said to a media that he was pretty sure that most terrorism in the United States was actually done by white dudes.
Right. Yes.
But yeah, so John Kasich wants to spread Judeo-Christian values in the Middle East to make them like us better. I'm pretty sure it's us trying to force our religion on them where they already have a religion that's causing a lot of these problems. Mm-hmm. But actually, Lindsey Graham, I don't agree with the man very often. This might be actually the one time I agree with Lindsey Graham. Mm-hmm. Actually came back and told the media that he was thinking that John Kasich's idea wasn't so fabulous because he thinks we already tried that, and that was the Crusades.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, when Lindsey Graham burns you, it's a bad day in the presidential campaign.
So, what? I mean, who around you... I mean, this just goes again to when you live in a bubble, you have no one around you of any different experience or background, and you have all of these people who are like you, have the same experience, and come from the same place, and they can't, you know, ever think of... It reminds me, it's like when big companies come out and with dumb racist or sexist campaigns, it's like, yeah, because you didn't have nobody else in the room there with any other experience to tell you that's a dumb idea. Right. Like, he had no one else in the room there to tell him, that sounds really horrible. Yeah. Like, don't say that. Mm-hmm. I don't even know why you're thinking that, but we can keep that between us. Yeah. Don't go out there and say that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. So
ridiculous.
John Kasich gets the walk of shame for that one. I mean, there was a lot of options last week, but that one just kind of came right to the top. So
many options with the GOP candidates. Uh-huh. I know. It'll almost be kind of sad when it's over. Almost.
Almost.
Almost. Because, I mean,
actually, it might be really, really sad, because if Trump is their candidate, then there's something really, really, really wrong with our world.
Yes.
And Trump actually had the best comment on John Kasich. Donald.
Yeah, this was good.
The Donald. Went on a massive Twitter rant.
It was awesome.
Just about John Kasich. The one that Narol actually retweeted because we liked. This is Donald Trump saying, once John Kasich announced he was running for president and opened his mouth, and realized he was a complete and total dud.
That is awesome.
So true. So true.
I mean, just so an true. Absolutely epic rant. Multiple news outlets covered it. Because apparently Kasich announced that he was spending $2.5 million of campaign cash.
It's a super PAC. It's not his money. It's a super PAC.
$2.5 million of somebody's money. It didn't come out of Kasich's pocket.
No.
Is being spent specifically to attack Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Trump went on a Twitter rant to combat the $2.5 million.
Yeah.
And he probably was as effective as the $2.5 million.
I don't think that's going to help him. I mean, it doesn't really seem that any of it. I mean, a lot of them have tried to attack Trump, and they would try to attack Carson. Well, I guess not so much Carson, but...
Carson's attacking Carson. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's just standing back and letting him do it.
Just self-implode. Go for it.
Oh, bless his heart.
That's really all you can say about him.
Yes. Oh, bless his little heart. I know, right? That's, yeah. That's
I wish that was crazy. The case with Trump, but he doesn't seem to be going away with his. We're going to register all Muslims in the United States because that went really well the last time somebody
No, and I saw the video at his rally recently where a Black Lives Matter protester got beat up. And he said the guy deserved it because he was being obnoxious. First, he was like, I don't know if he got roughed up. And then he was like, well, he was being very obnoxious, blah, blah, blah. I'm like,
Donald Trump calling somebody obnoxious.
Seriously? Right. I'm like, so that means that the guy deserved to get beat up? Like, okay. Good luck winning a general election in 2016 with white men.
Yeah, you can talk to Mitt Romney about his presidency based on white men.
Yes, exactly, really well.
And the first vote, the first state, Iowa, New Hampshire, they're really soon. Mm-hmm. It's like right in the beginning of January. Yeah. We're under 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So they're going to have to figure something out quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, every candidate that falls, Trump gets, you know, a portion of those supporters.
Yeah.
They got to go somewhere, and some of them are going to go to Donald Trump. And they're really pushing past the point where this was like a cute little fun experiment. Yeah. Now they actually need a serious candidate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There were some articles last week talking about how a lot of people in the GOP are looking at Kasich and Rubio as like the two serious candidates. Honestly, when I look at the field, those are the only two that don't look like clowns.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But
relatively.
Then, you know, Kasich has his record, which we've discussed to death. And Marco Rubio proudly, you know, bragged on the debate stage that he opposes all exceptions.
Mm-hmm. Even to save a woman's life.
And he's being bashed in his home state because he ain't going to work.
Right. Bush is out of, yeah.
He wants his new job, but he ain't doing his current job.
Right.
I guess he's over it. He don't want to be a senator anymore.
Yeah.
He's still taking the paycheck, though.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah, this is getting interesting. And the Trump versus Kasich thing was fortunately all entertaining fluff.
It was.
Grab some popcorn and just play along, kids.
Yeah. Okay. Enough electoral politics. So there was a headline that we saw from I think Time magazine talking about they're expecting cancer caused by oral sex to eclipse cancer caused by smoking here in the next year or two, which
I was completely flabbergasted when you and Kelly told me that last week. I was just like standing here like, what? Like, why? Yeah. I was like, I don't understand. Then she was like, HPV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy.
Well, there was actually, I can't even remember who did it. I think like it was Edna Brown and it was in the Senate. I think it was last year, introduced a bill to add the HPV vaccine to the list of vaccines that children have to get at various points.
This is Gardasil?
Yeah, Gardasil. And to be in school.
Yes.
And it was actually the first time I had heard some of the statistics about oral cancer.
Yes.
In men based on HPV, primarily men. Because in women, it primarily causes cervical cancer, as everybody knows. But it was really the first time I had heard some of those increasing rates of oral cancer in men because of HPV. And it was very shocking. Actually, even the members of the legislative committee they were hearing the bill on were all like, what? This causes that too? Because nobody really knows that it's even an issue out there.
Right. And I mean, it probably has for a long time. Mm-hmm. But since so many people of past generations smoked so much, it was dismissed as, you know, this was caused by smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's oral sex. So how many jokes do you want to make? But
I want to say kudos to those men. However, get tested or use a dental dam.
Yeah. Well, dental dams, condoms, Gardasil. There are lots of ways to protect yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't stop doing it. Just protect yourself.
I mean, we're in this sort of, I hate to make the Lewinsky reference, but we're in the post-Lewinsky, you know, age of internet porn. And when, you know, when we talk about sex ed and we hear so much testimony from the comprehensive sex ed, you know, the health educators that talk to students, we know that, you know, teens, especially ones who get abstinence-only programming and are taught to, you know, to avoid vaginal intercourse, they're increasing rates of oral sex.
Yes. Yes.
And so these rates are going to go up. And at the same time, you've got all these parents who are completely ignorant of mm-hmm. the need to give their kids, yeah. you know, that vaccine.
Oral and anal first. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Totally. I mean, you know, I'm married to a social worker who hears all sorts of, like, you know, very serious, you know, it's fun to giggle about, but it wasn't meant to be a lecture because, I mean, she and I were kind of laughing about this, but she got a briefing from the sheriff's department and was, mm. you know, hearing about all of the new rates of, you know, ER visits because mm-hmm. of people who have, you know, injuries from anal sex. A lot of it is, you know, from sexual assaults. And they're really looking at the fact that all of these kids and grown men mm-hmm. are watching mm-hmm. tons of porn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so all of a sudden there's this just new acceptance of the idea of anal sex and the idea of, you know, increased oral sex. And, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. at no point in time does anybody discuss ramifications of this.
No.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then all these parents are like, well, I don't want to give my kid Gardasil because that'll just encourage them to go have sex. Or they're saying, I trust my kid to whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And completely living this yeah. thoroughly false, yeah. you know, lifestyle.
Yes.
Just mm-hmm. ignorant of the real world life that, you know,
mm-hmm. and your kid, and your kid might not be having sex at 9. It shouldn't be having sex at 9. Like, that's right. actually yeah. not legal in Ohio. And but, like, by vaccinating them at that point, when they become sexually active, as a parent, you want to think about, you know, at the age of 25, more likely between, you know, 17 and 18. They're protected. And if they get right. the vaccine, I was actually in a presentation, and I didn't know this until they presented it to me. If you get your kid vaccinated at 9, when you get a vaccination, there's like a peak amount of antibodies and resistance to disease, and then it kind of levels off, and it becomes your lifelong immunity. So it doesn't level off as high as the peak immunity.
Okay.
So if your kid gets the vaccine at like 9 and 10, when they're first supposed to be getting it,
right,
the leveling off is higher. So they have a higher lifelong immunity than if you wait till 11, 12, or 13. Mm-hmm. So even if, you know, thinking long-term for your child's mm-hmm. health,
yeah.
they will be more protected against getting a cancer that can kill them.
Right.
If you do it at 9, it doesn't mean that your 9-year-old's going to run out and have sex. It just means that you've protected your child.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. it's just all the various hang-ups people have mm-hmm. about the vaccine and those kinds of things. You know, do your research and look into it, but, you know, trust your doctor and trust that the medical experts want to protect your child and exactly. protect your child.
Right.
And teach your child that oral sex and anal sex need protection as well. You know, and mm-hmm. we always talk about how it's birth control and it's family planning. So, you know, condoms kind of get lumped into this. It prevents pregnancy thing, but yeah. right. it's actually a lot more about presenting disease yes. and a lot of these things. So you still need a condom when you're doing, you know, having oral sex, and you still need a condom mm-hmm. when you're, you know, doing anal sex, or you can get dental dams from the Columbus Public Health Department. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Planned Parenthood.
Or Planned Parenthood. Absence. I was really, when the educators from Planned Parenthood came and were mm-hmm. talking about, you know, the abstinence only. First of all, abstinence only education, those kids are more likely to get pregnant or have STIs. Mm-hmm. Kids who get abstinence plus, because a lot of people think somehow comprehensive sex education doesn't include yeah. abstinence, which is not true.
It starts with abstinence.
Exactly. And those kids are more likely to wait to have sex once they know mm-hmm. all the different things that could possibly happen. And so I just think that people should, and it's like you said, a lot of the parents, they think mm-hmm. that giving them, you know, condoms or birth control is going to give them a license to do those things. But anyway, something that opened up my eyes to when they were speaking is that a lot of the abstinence only education does not, you know, it doesn't include children who may have already been sexually assaulted.
Right.
And mm-hmm. so now you're telling me I'm no longer a virgin because, you know, I was someone already yeah. had sex with me, so this doesn't even apply to me now. And it also doesn't include LGBT youth mm-hmm. because, well, at the not anymore, thankfully, but at the time when most of this was happening, they couldn't get married in the yeah. first place. So you're telling me I need to wait till I get married, but I can't get married. And also, maybe I'm not having penis vagina sex. Mm-hmm. Maybe yeah. I'm going to do something else. And you didn't really take into account for that.
Right. Well, actually, it was a big part when Elizabeth Smart, the young woman who had been kidnapped in Utah, in her memoir autobiography she wrote, she actually talked about how it was one of the reasons that she didn't fight to get out as hard, because she had learned in her abstinence-only sex education program that she was dirty and gross and nobody was ever going to want her again because mm-hmm. she had been sexually yes. assaulted.
Yes.
And that was the tape that was playing through her head while this man was raping her over and over and over again. And she felt like she was worthless and dirty and that nobody would love her ever, ever again, because that's what the program taught her.
Exactly.
So think about all those kids that are sitting in those rooms who have been sexually abused as children. And that's the message that those children are getting.
Yeah.
Or even the ones who chose to have sex. One of the former Planned Parenthood employee, Gary Doherty, one of his favorite sayings on this topic was, you know, abstinence works perfectly until it doesn't anymore.
Yes.
You know, it's 100% effective until you have sex. So we need to be educating those ones over here. And if you're doing abstinence only and that kid has already had even consensual sex, they're going to completely tune you out because it doesn't apply right. to them anymore. Mm-hmm.
I mean, every parent I
Bristol
know...
Bristol Palin.
Every parent I know admits that their kid does stupid things uh-huh. and they need to extend that admission into this area. Mm-hmm. And they also need to admit that there's a chance, you know, as tragic as it is, that their kid might be a victim of sexual yeah. assault. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Both of those things together is reason to get your kid vaccinated.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. So,
the upside of the story is that, you know, oral sex caused cancer will surpass that of smoking because the rates of smoking are going down.
Woo-hoo.
Mm. Don't smoke.
Yes.
Especially if you're pregnant.
Right.
Yes.
Or at any time. Yeah. God, I see people on the street and I'm just like, you're still smoking.
Mm-hmm. So blasé.
Just stop. So, you know, get Chantix, uh-huh. get something, get help. Just, uh-huh. just stop.
Get Chantix.
On another uh-huh. kind of lighthearted note, so frequent watchers might, or listeners might, remember a rampage I went on, I guess, back in May-ish?
Sure.
It was late in the budget process, so it was probably somewhere around there. So it was the final House hearing on the state budget. Two very adorable sixth grade girls who proved how smart they were testified in support of, well, against a funding proposal in the budget because it cut funding from their school district. And both of them were highly articulate, answered questions really, really well. And both of them had a question posed to them by a Republican male legislator of, hey, so I have this sixth grade grandson of mine.
They got hit on.
They got hit on.
Two girls. By two different legislators.
Yes. And I came in.
Like, I wouldn't suggest it, honey. They're probably going to look like them when they grow up, so don't do it.
And this was after some really fabulous, actually, Dan Ramos, who we talked about earlier today, has really great floor speeches, asked one of them if she, you know, how important art and music was to her day. And then, you know.
Dan
you know,
asked an appropriate
yes,
question.
Yes, Dan asked mm-hmm. an appropriate question and then followed it with an appropriate kind of.
Right.
proposition of, you know, hey, we're recruiting for candidates in 2032. And the Republican
candidates to run for political
yes.
office.
Yes.
So this is a great thing to talk
yes.
to a kid uh-huh. about.
Yes.
You should run for office. You're smart and intelligent. You should run for office. That's a message these girls should be hearing in that room.
Yes.
Not, you're smart and intelligent, and my seventh grade son would like to date you.
Yeah, because that's your only worth is mm-hmm. finding a husband.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what those girls learned today, that day, and I came in royally irritated and I guess annoyed Gabe to the point where he made a fabulous little YouTube video.
You annoyed Gabe.
I annoyed Gabe.
I did not say that.
I wouldn't stop talking about it. So he made a fabulous video called Questionable Questions.
Yep.
And it was kind of just something we put together. Actually, I think you've said a couple of times, I would have spent more time on it if I had more attention.
Yeah, spent like half an hour. We took some video that we took off the Ohio Channel,
mm-hmm.
Who did not want us to do so.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Ohio Channel quickly responded to us posting the video, requesting YouTube take down the video because they had their copyrighted content in it. Right.
We, of course, then, because we're not constitutional scholars in this office and don't really, you know.
Yeah,
We know what we know.
And we are constitutional
scholars, but we're different areas yes. of expertise.
Yes, exactly.
I'm like, so, we know stuff.
We do. So we just kind of figured, well, I guess we, you know, violated copyright. Sure, we posted the
that
video
on
it. That was fun. YouTube will take the video down. And, you know, 800 people saw it. It was actually one of our most, you know, successful videos at 800 people. And yeah. It's like, woohoo, you know, it did its job. And we were just going to kind of let it go. And so we just kind of figured that would happen. And then we got an email from YouTube saying that they were not going to take the video down because they thought it fell into fair use guidelines that are kind of a way to get around using copyrighted material for commentary and educational purposes. Mm-hmm. Kind of in the same way that, you know, Jon Stewart used to do on The Daily Show. You know, you show this clip of somebody else, you make commentary
right.
on it.
Yeah.
And so not only were they not going to take the video down, but they are starting this new project kind of highlighting just a handful of videos, turned out to be four, across the United States that exemplified fair use principles. And that if the High Channel continued to push and threatened to sue us, YouTube would actually come in with $1 million of legal aid to protect the video. To which we were like, sure.
Right.
And thought, you know, I'd get a little press or whatever. But it actually ended up in the New York Times last week.
Yay!
So this little video that had, like, when it all started, maybe, like, 400 views. And then Ohio Channel threw a little fit. So, of course, we pushed it out a little harder. And we got it to, like, 800 or so
views. We didn't
views.
Push. Supporters of yeah. ours. Uh-huh. I mean, I was yes. totally over it by that point.
Yeah.
Supporters of ours.
Yes. Like Connie.
Distributed.
Yes.
And, yeah,
Connie. Yes. Connie Schultz.
Yeah. And some of our coalition partners distributed it around and maybe got it to, like, 800 or 900. This little YouTube video that would have gotten absolutely no attention was in the New York Times and now has over 4,000 views.
Yes.
So good job, Ohio Channel, and making sure that everyone saw your
also
video.
Also a great example of the Barbara Streisand effect as we were
educated
on.
If you don't say anything, no one will see it.
Yes,
even
exactly.
if it's in plain view. But Google it, Streisand effect. It's great.
So that was fun enough in and of itself. And then the best actual press clip, you know, I mean, the New York Times is awesome and all, but the best press clip, most entertaining press clip, actually, on this subject was actually Life News. And they actually have now started a campaign.
Life Site News.
Life Site News, yes.
LifeSiteNews.com, that bastion of liberal thought.
Quoted me, Gabe, and our executive director, Kelly Copeland. I think it's yes. the first time ever all three of us have been quoted in one media article.
They quoted you by looking back at your blog post from May.
Yeah.
Like, thanks
that
for
I had
press.
Completely forgot about.
Yeah.
We're like, when did I quote this? Oh. So, but yeah, they actually are now encouraged because YouTube is obviously supporting the pro-abortion agenda and NARAL.
Obviously.
And now they're calling for a boycott of YouTube, which I'm sure we'll go over fabulously well because nobody right. ever watches cat videos on YouTube.
You're right.
So, you know, this little
good
video
luck with that,
that
yeah.
we threw together because Gabe got irritated at me not shutting up is now like...
I can't believe we're one of four. That's
amazing.
Of all the videos, mm-hmm. can you... I mean, there's probably, what, billions of videos?
Oh, yeah.
I'll use the B word, billions. Mm-hmm. And we got picked with one of four. That's yeah. amazing.
Maybe somebody who works for YouTube has a sixth grade daughter or sister or niece.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Tick them off. You know, 2 points about that. First off, a lot of people are reading it as in NARAL is being supported by YouTube.
Yeah. No.
It's a pledge on their part to cover any legal bills up to $1 million.
Yeah.
We don't get
if we
no.
need it.
No.
Yeah. yeah.
We haven't seen a dime
yeah.
and
no.
won't.
Yeah, because as the New York Times rightfully said, you know,
right.
they picked four videos that are really clearly fair use. I mean, right. we spent 20 minutes on, you know, various websites and figured out that we were within fair use guidelines.
Yeah.
So, you know, some legal scholar saying, yeah, there's no way in heck you'd ever win a lawsuit on this, so they're not going to get sued, so you're totally
right.
safe in pledging legal support.
And then the second point about this is that what's complete bullshit in the State House is that we can't videotape yeah. committee hearings ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We have to ask permission from the chair. The chairs lately have been denying
mm-hmm.
those requests. So the only opportunity for us to have video is to rip off the Ohio Channel,
yeah.
Yeah.
which we now know is a legal ripoff. But we're only using that content because we can't make our own.
Yeah.
Had we had our own camera in the room, then mm-hmm. nobody would have complained.
Yeah.
Nothing would have went to YouTube. They never would have seen this, and it wouldn't have been in any papers because like six people would have seen the video and been like, oh, that's okay. And then that would have been the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
By denying us our own camera, that started the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm.
At any point in time, had any legislator said, oh, just let this go, don't make a big deal of it, none of this would have happened.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, complete crap that we can't have our own cameras.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that I think we really need to challenge. And now we've got a nice,
and we can't take in signs.
Yeah. No signs.
The signs is a whole other ball of wax, you know, we should be able to videotape hearings on our own with our own cameras. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
they're public meetings.
Yeah.
So, now on to our favorite segment.
Sing
now
it, Randy.
On to our last segment. Let's get it on. Actually, we don't have any pending events at the moment. We will be having our Women of Color Happy Hour again Thursday, December 10th from 5:30 to 7:30 at Replenish Spa. But other than that, I don't think we have any upcoming events.
Yeah. Yeah. So we decided this week that we would, you know, in honor of Thanksgiving, as everybody's
listening. The greatest American holiday.
I know. My personal favorite holiday. Thank you very much. We would, you know, spend some time talking about, you know, giving some thanks this week, because so often we're complaining and don't really have time to kind of lift up heroes. So, What we're thankful for, I'll start it off. I'm thankful for our abortion providers and all of the people who work in our abortion clinics, because they do the job on the front lines every single day. As we talked about at the very beginning, without access, there is no choice. So thank them for, you know, standing on the front lines against these ridiculous protesters that they always have, and making sure women in Ohio get the compassionate health care that they deserve.
Mm-hmm. I will jump on that and say the patients who become advocates, because, you know, well, for them, it's not a political thing. In a lot of countries, abortion is not a political thing. It's considered healthcare. It's a medical procedure. United States is, you know, one of those countries that has made it into this big political thing. And so I appreciate the women whose stories we've helped to tell and who have come out. Because again, like, that's something personal, that decision that they made, and they weren't trying to make a political stance about it. But because they know what is going on, and that, you know, that those rights are under attack, that they're able to, you know, willing to go in front of cameras or other places and tell their stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give my shout out to kind of the other, like, really kick-ass advocates that we've been working with in various cities to stand up for their hometown clinics. Marlena in Toledo, Amanda at Founders here with her awesome Pro-Choice Cats t-shirts.
Yes.
And the awesome billboards.
Awesome billboards.
Yeah. The kids at Preterm, I shouldn't say kids, the grown women at Preterm. women have options up there, just doing an amazing job.
Mm-hmm. Shout out the Dayton Women's Rights Alliance.
Yeah.
Give them a shout out. They
absolutely
do a lot of great work.
Mm-hmm. Our Planned Parenthood friends, who were testifying, even though they're not lobbyists, you know, Kelly Novak representing her, team of educators for Planned Parenthood of Greater Ohio.
Yeah.
And then the kids, I like the word kids, the kids down, in Cincinnati for Planned Parenthood of Southwest
kids.
Ohio.
Yeah.
Everybody's been doing a great job, to try and, you know, just keep the ball moving. So, great work.
Yeah,
happy Thanksgiving. We'll see everybody, next week.
Bye. Bye.